So I'm going to talk about Satellite, which is a system that we did in measuring internet structure. And the basic idea is that there's two seemingly unrelated problems. One is determining site structure, so where websites are. And we get some view from CDNs. Like Cloudflare, for instance, shows its... This is auto-playing. Cloudflare shows its locations where it exists. And it also shows the IP addresses that it uses. And many CDNs do this. But what they don't show is that for my site, where are the visitors in Asia going to get to my server? Where are the visitors in Europe going to get to my server? I need to make this not autoplay. Okay. And so they don't provide this information that provides me with insight into how my site is actually going to be structured and which IP addresses my site is actually going to get. The other thing that we're trying to understand is censorship online. And so right now, censorship as it exists looks sort of like these maps. This one is OpenNet Initiative. There's another one by Freedom House. And the way that these maps get constructed is that these organizations work with a bunch of partners in a bunch of countries around the world. And they sort of ask them, what are the domains that are sensitive or might be blocked? And then they manually code to say, well, this looks like this is like more severe or less severe, and they come up with color-coded maps. But it's really not that systematic, and it's also not like data-driven, right? We don't have any real consistency of knowing how these things compare. And so what we found when we started investigating is that both of these problems are rooted in DNS, and they're really sort of interlinked. So let me give you an example of that. If I resolve Twitter.com from a few different places, and here, for instance, from the United States, from Russia, and China, I get three different IP addresses back. And if I do this resolution from the perspective of saying, what is the CDN deployment of my site, I'm going to say, well, these are three different geographic locations. And alternatively, if I'm doing it from the perspective of saying, where is their censorship, I'm going to say, well, the US one maybe is Twitter, and these other ones are somehow bad. And I'm not going to necessarily know how to quantify that. And in reality, it's sort of this mixture, right? The one in Russia was actually another Twitter one, even though it was a different /16. It was a fairly different IP address. And the one in China was just a random bogus IP address. Okay. So to talk about this, what we're going to do is I'm going to talk a little bit more about DNS and introduce that and say why this ends up being the system that is at the root of both of these. We'll talk about how we automatically find different domains that are actually on the same servers and are hosted on the same infrastructure. And then from there, we'll talk about the measurement system we built on top of that to find those clusters, how we determine censorship on top of that, and then I'll share a few results at the end. Cool. So DNS is the system that translates from a human-readable domain name into an IP address. So if I'm looking up bbc.co.uk, I'm first going to need to figure out what that computer addressable IP is. And DNS, as a refresher, is sort of this one level of recursion. I'm going to talk to a resolver that's generally provided by my local network or organization, and it's going to first go up to this root set of servers and ask them who's BBC. And they won't know, but they'll point me down to the UK registration, who will then tell me where BBC is, and that one will know. And so this system of DNS is used by CDNs because it's logically the first step in page load. You have to tell me what server. And so BBC, if it's got multiple servers around the world, is going to use this system to give me the server that's close to me and close to my resolver, at least. And so if some other resolver somewhere else asks for BBC, it may get a different answer. DNS is also used for censorship. If my local network doesn't want me to access, it's very easy, technically, for it to just have that list. And so when it gets that query, it will instead just give me a block page server. Or if the network doesn't want me to have it, DNS is both an unencrypted and unauthenticated protocol, and also is at the domain level, which is about the right granularity that you might want to stop content from being accessed. If you block an IP address, you may block several unrelated sites, which isn't the intention. Okay. So satellite is going to look at all the different resolvers that we can find, and is from those going to find all of the different IP addresses we get back and try to understand how they all work together and get a global view of what responses for DNS of common sites different resolvers are getting. Cool. So in terms of scale, we run a ZMAP scan over the IPv4 address space roughly weekly, and we find about 7 million active running DNS resolvers that are willing to talk with us. There's roughly 20,000 networks, so autonomous systems, or corresponding to roughly an ISP, that have at least 20 different open resolvers in them, and that corresponds to right around 170 countries, where we can start to say something statistical about the responses that we get back. Once we find these 7 million open resolvers, we query them with the Alexa top 10,000 domains, and so we get back sort of this large corpus of data, and we use that to try and understand, you know, what are the right answers of where all of these sites are actually located in terms of servers. So let me start by giving you some insight or intuition of what this data that we get back looks like. This is Wikipedia. And so the y-axis here is the number of times we see an IP address coming back from all of these queries, and the x-axis is different unique IP addresses. And so what we see is that there's roughly 4 IP addresses that we sort of get back a lot. Most of the responses will have one of these IPs, with this 198.35.26.96 being the most common. And so you could sort of say, well, I can come up with this metric for correctness by looking at where that cliff, that fall off is, and say that these IPs that are always coming back are probably good, and that tail of sort of things that come back a few times are bogus. But this doesn't work for all sites. If I look at Google, I don't see that same cliff. Instead, there's this long trail of IPs that are all sort of returned about the same. And in fact, there's several hundred different IPs that are all returned with relatively similar frequencies because of how that site is geographically distributing its points of presence. Right? There's no central IP that everyone's getting back. Everyone's getting back different IPs. And that makes it harder to distinguish a bad IP that's due to censorship versus an IP that's just used uncommonly in some network. So if we look at sort of how this distribution of different IP addresses that we get back happens across all of the sites that we monitored, we get something like this. So now on the y-axis, I have the fraction of domains, and on the x-axis, I've got how many IP addresses I need to account for 75% of total resolutions. So you see that for 60 or 80% of the domains, there's like 1 to 4 IP addresses that we get back. They're like Wikipedia. That's the left side of this graph. But there's also this long tail. There's these domains that behave more like Google, where there's hundreds of IP addresses that we have to include if we want to get the bulk of our resolutions. And those are the ones that are geographically distributed, that are served on these shared infrastructure CDNs. Cool. And so the insight that we're going to take instead of trying to find that cliff is that CDNs serve many sites, and that interference on these anomalies is not correlated with that. So let me give you an example of that divergence. These are two sites that are hosted on Fastly, Imgur and Scribd. And in most networks, we find that the IP addresses we get are pointing to the same sort of basic servers, right? So in British Telecom, they're both in the 185.31.19. In Iran, on the ITC ISP, where Scribd is block, we see that the bulk of responses instead are going to a 10.10 internal IP address. Now, we could say this is clearly wrong because that's an internal IP address, but if we want to do this automatically and get it for other countries where it might be a random IP address or it might not be as obvious that this isn't actually the server, what we can instead say is, well, Scribd is part of Fastly, and we've got 100 other domains that are all still returning to IP addresses that are in the Fastly IP space or that are behaving like a cluster. And here we've got a network where one or a few domains is behaving abnormally. It's diverging from what we would expect the rest of that CDN and the rest of the cluster to respond as. Cool. So now we want to talk about how we do that automatically. So to come up with sort of an analysis on this data, we're going to calculate two properties. One is domain similarity. How similar do we think two domains are in their resolutions? And to do that, what we're going to do is we're going to look at all of the resolutions of A.B, of each pair of domains, and we're going to see how much of the time they go to the same IP addresses. So if, for instance, I've got in one AS that they both go to the same IP address, and then in some other AS they go also to the same IP address, even if that's different, that's going to result in me having a high similarity for those domains. The other quantity that we're going to calculate is how much we trust any given IP address to be the resolution for a domain, so our trust in an IP. And that's going to be based on saying, well, for this IP address, how similar are all of the different domains that have resolved to that IP address? Does this IP, as I look at all of the total aggregate resolutions to it, are all of those domains having similarity with each other or not? So for instance, if in some other one, this other 192 address comes in, I haven't seen any resolutions from the other similar domains, and so I'm going to give it a low trust. So let me try and formalize that a little bit. Our domain similarity for each pair is going to be an inner product. We use cosine similarity, where we're basically taking the vector of all of the resolutions, and we're going to look at what that fraction is. Our trust is going to basically be taking the resolutions to each IP from each domain and looking at that as a similarity with a given domain. Right? What I'm trying to say is, you know, for imgur is 5.5.5.5 trusted. In order to do that, I'm going to look at each other domain that's resolved to 5.5.5.5 and see how similar those domains are with imgur and use that as a weighting. Now, these two quantities are somehow interlinked, right? Once I know if I trust an IP address or don't trust it, I can recalculate my similarity, weighting the product of resolutions on that trust of those IPs. And we can iterate those two quantity calculations to a fixed point. And we find that this is useful because it gives us very distinct clusters. So let me show that. So this is our domain similarity calculations. On the y-axis, we've got the number of times we see a similarity of a given value across each of the pairs of domains, right? So there's 10,000 times 10,000 domains. And then the x-axis is the similarity, where a 1.0 similarity means we think these two domains are always resolving to the same IP addresses, and a 0 means we think these two domains are completely uncorrelated. They're going to different servers. In our first iteration, when we initially calculate IP similarity, or initially calculate our domain similarity, we see a fairly large number, 1,000 to a few thousand domains, at each given point in between, where we're not sure if these domains are similar or are not similar. By calculating our trust in IPs and repeating that process, we find that in a few iterations, we have very few domain pairs where we're not sure if we believe that they're either should be resolving the same way or should not be resolving the same way. Once we've got this, it's easy to extract from that matrix of ones and zeros the highly connected clusters as our belief of these are domains that are served on the same infrastructure. So here's an example of that. Here's sort of another table of that Fastly CDN cluster that we can automatically extract. And we have to sort of label them. We look at, like, what is this domain actually hosted on to go from just having these clusters of things that we believe are on the same CDNs and get them back out to, well, this is Fastly. So the implementation of Satellite, we're scanning the top 10,000 Alexa domains. We scan not only the bare domains that's provided, but also the www prefix on them, and that adds another couple thousand where the www prefix is served on different infrastructure. So there's some domains that are on multiple CDNs between the bare and the non-bare domains. We use one machine to do this, and part of that goal is that we want this to be a sustainable and open process. So we've run this for a couple years at this point, and the basic goal is that it should be easy for any organization to start up their own instance, and they don't have to trust us. We're using a modified ZMAP client to do the scanning, and then the analysis runs in the Node.js pipeline. We run at about 100,000 packets per second, which is below a 1 gigabit link. We do that because we're sending our requests to active DNS servers, so we're basically getting back packets for every request we make, and we end up being CPU limited or IO limited on our disk rather than on the network. we end up with roughly 300 gigabytes of data that we collect each week. Luckily, it's fairly compressible. And we have 2 gigs of, or 2 years of measurements, a couple terabytes at this point compressed, that are all public and online. Cool. So what we wanted to do in the censorship side of this was be able to not just say, well, we don't trust this IP address, and so as a result, we think there's something sketchy going on for a domain. But we wanted to actually be able to point to something that was human understandable about why we were saying that there was censorship in a, on a network. And to do that, we came up with 4 quantities that we can extract out of this data that we believe are pretty intuitive as reasons to explain that this looks like there's interference. The first is if there's too few responses. We do this before any aggregation. If there's a domain that's responding too few times or ends up with unparsable responses for a given domain and network, where both the network normally gives us more responses and that domain on other networks gives us more responses, we're able to see those dips in quantity and say that looks like something sketchy going on. For the 60 to 80% of single home domains, we're able to find that cliff and do that naive analysis and say the right answer was these ones, and in this network, we didn't see any of those correct IP addresses that we believe are the globally right IP addresses. We find that there's a couple cases, most notably in China, where China responds random IP addresses on some of the sites that they block. So you get different IP addresses each time you query a site. And so for CDNs like Google, where Google sort of has its own infrastructure and there isn't this cluster of other things that behave differently, we can say, well, normally the IP addresses that we get back on queries for this all go to the same AS. So we normally are expecting that there's one entity that we see as where all of the servers are that host this this service. But in this network, we're getting way more. And so if we see that IP diversity, where we're suddenly getting IPs that aren't in any correlated network when they normally are, we're able to point to that as something weird is going on. And then finally, we take our known CDN clusters and we find this divergence. And we say, in this network, everything else that we found in this CDN cluster was behaving in one way, and this domain was not. Cool. So let me finish with a few results. For roughly 4,500 of the domains, there was a file on them called favicon.ico, just a static image that shows up in the top corner. And so we requested that file from all of the different IP addresses that resolved from it, that we ever saw in any of the resolutions. For about 90% of them, our IP trust, which was either 0 or 1, with a few intermediates, so we cut off at a 0.5 cutoff, agreed with whether or not those IPs were able to serve that favicon to us correctly. What we found was that 95% of the misidentifications, so the things where we didn't agree with them, were where we were being too conservative, where we said we don't trust this IP address, but that IP address was able to serve it. And so what this is indicative of is that we weren't fully clustering these CDNs into a single entity. And I'll explain a little bit more about that on the next slide. Here's the largest CDN clusters that we then hand-labeled. And the thing that's maybe most notable here is that we have some of these clusters, like Akamai, that don't account for all of the domains that we would believe are in there. And we believe that there are many more Akamai sites than are shown in this table. And so the reason for that is that what we're actually seeing here is not the full CDN footprint, but rather we're seeing sites that are commonly resolving to the same IP space. And so, for instance, in Akamai, many of their customers will end up with their own set of IP addresses that are dedicated to those customers. For instance, to serve older versions of Internet Explorer that need their own specific cert and can't do SNI. And so we won't necessarily cluster those customers into the larger CDN because we'll say, well, that domain resolves to this more specific set of IP addresses that we don't see as overlapping with the wider Akamai space. We do collect and have publicly as well a set of metadata around this, like the reverse pointer lookups, that would help unify Akamai better, but we aren't including that in this calculation, which is more for our use in censorship measurement. We can generate data-driven graphs and see the different forms of censorship that come out over time, and so sort of the most exciting part about this is that we can do it over time, and so this is the number of domains that we see blocked in Iran. where we hand-labeled a set of ASs that we know are in Iran, and then look at where the anomalies or domains that we believe are blocked in those ASs over the last 2 years. This is on our website at satellite.cs.washington.edu/Iran, and updates where for each week you can see which domains were not there or were not able to be accessed. Cool. So that's Satellite. There's a public data set, links on satellite.cs.washington.edu, code's public as well, and the exciting thing is that we're able to do all this with one machine. Thank you.
Questions?
Hi, Stefan Belmo from Google. Do you have any evidence that some countries are playing games with Satellite, trying to look better than they really are to their own citizens, for example?
So we haven't seen any evidence of that. There's a couple things that you could imagine an adversary would do if they knew that a system like this exists. One thing would be you don't give bad results to international requests. But that ends up being a little bit harder than it seems, because what we're doing is we're asking the resolvers that are already in that country, and they're going to do a recursive lookup on our behalf. So when they recursively look up that address, they're going to see, the poisoned response, and they're going to give that back to us. So even if you're only censoring stuff that's originating within your domain, we're still going to catch that secondary effect. Alternatively, you could potentially try and block all of the international DNS requests entirely, just so that you don't leak that information outside of your network. That's going to cause your users who want to serve authoritative DNS inside of your network pain and may have other issues, right? So we haven't seen that. But it would be great to have a few different organizations all running this from different IP addresses, so that there's not like we're just going to block a single entity.
Hi, Fred Douglas. Can you go back up one slide? So you mentioned here about the number, you're tracking the number. If you said it, I didn't catch it. You know anything about what happened in October of 2015 that caused this drastic shift in behavior?
So this was actually really interesting, which is that Iran had an election in February, and there were a lot of people in January and February looking to see if there was more blocking, and there wasn't any change in policy in January and February. The change in policy happened in October, several months in advance. And so if you're looking for things even just at an event, you may not see them. And so what we saw here that we thought was really exciting is we were able to see this thing that happened 6 months earlier, where it wasn't necessarily obviously correlated, but ended up having a lot of political domains that started getting blocked at that point.
So I thought it worth pointing out a comparison with an ATC paper from quite some time ago. I'm guessing about 15 years ago, there was this thing they called the Peacock Maps. And there was something there that was monitoring network connectivity, but looking at it, you had a very similar thing. You could look at particular points and say, this is the point at which this place in the world suddenly dropped off the internet because of internal strife and things. And so I think this is another tool that's very useful for monitoring sort of geopolitical information.
Yeah, so there's a couple of these. There's another technique that's coming out that a group at Princeton is working on for using IP side channels to look at IP level connectivity. That should be able to scale in the same way. And I think it's just a matter of having people running these external measurements and putting those data sets publicly so that we can start having these open measurements rather than rebuilding the systems to collect them all the time.
Okay. Joseph Hatala from Fastly. What else could you do with help from the CDNs? So for example, not necessarily with an interaction with each individual CDN, but if there was some standard API or data set that they would give you, what more could you do?
So I think the easiest thing is that helps with ground truth, right? In that you can get that sense of what are the actual IPs that we would expect. The other thing that I think ends up playing out a little bit here, although we tried to avoid it too much by not doing too much geographic stuff, is that what we've got as a community in terms of geolocation is not great for servers. We've got things like MaxMind that work pretty well for clients. But they completely ignore Anycast, which a lot of CDNs are using. And so being able to answer that question of what is this IP that I would expect for a client and where is it, like which point of presence would it be in, is something that's really interesting that's pretty hard for us to get at right now.
Okay, AS number is not reliable across the CDNs.
That's true. So, I mean, different CDNs work differently. Mm. Some use Anycast, some don't. Some have reverse pointers all the time, others don't. Some have whois information that's correctly set, others don't.
Okay, so if everybody had PTRs, even that would be of help.
Yes, PTR records are good.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Mm-hmm.